Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Megillah Daf Chof Zayin. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara Marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief formatted introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur will begin at the fourth wide line of the Gemara, if you prefer 14 lines from the top. Up till now, we've been discussing the issue of selling items that are associated with Kedusha and selling them in exchange for an item that has higher Kedusha, or the opposite. The Gemara here will deal with a sale and the use of the money for a parallel level of Kedusha. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah, Avol Mochru Torah Lo Yikhu Svarim. The Mishnah said that if you sold a Sefer Torah, so you should not use the money to buy Svarim, to buy Sifrei Nevi'im and Ksuvim. Ibayalaho. And before I actually begin the Gemara text, we glance at the side where we have a topic heading, the Nosei. Mahu Limkor Sefer Torah Yoshen Likach Boi Chodesh. Can you sell an old Sefer Torah and use the money to buy a new Sefer Torah? Needless to say, we're working in this year, coming off of our previous year, so the details concerning Malin, Bekodesh Velo Moridin, etc., these are topics that we discussed in our previous year, and so as to not belabor the point or sound overly repetitious for people who have already heard our previous year, we are being concise and terse in that matter. But if you are a first-time listener, by all means, listen to our previous shiur so as to be able to get into this topic more effectively. So the question now is, what about the sale of an item and using the money to buy something of the same level, Kedusha? As the Gemara unfolds, after raising the question, you will see triangles that appear in alternating directions. These are explained under the Mivneh, the structural note, with the triangle point facing up, Hoychocha de Mutter. This will be an attempt to show that it is allowed. And the flipped over triangle, Hoychocha de Osir, an attempt to demonstrate or prove that it is forbidden. In addition to that, after each attempt that the Gemara presents, the Gemara will reject each one as the Gemara continues, and we will note that rejection with a double underline. Now the Gemara itself. Is it permissible to sell an old Sefer Torah and use the money to buy a new Sefer Torah? Kevon delo malilei. Osir, do you say that since you're not raising the level of Kedusha with your new purchase, so it's not allowed, because the theme that we developed in our previous year was Malin Bekodesh, that you're allowed to trade up, so to speak, to sell up, sell and use the money for a higher level sanctity item. But here you're not going up in sanctity. Or do you say that since there is nowhere to go up from here, the Sefer Torah is our most holy item possible, and therefore since there's no up from here, there's no higher level from here, so we will allow using the money received in a sale of an old Sefer Torah for the purchase of a new Sefer Torah. Toshma. So now we try to prove one of the two sides of the question, and we indicated before, here we're going to try to prove that it's allowed. Avol Mochru Torah Lo Yikhu Svarim. The Mishnah taught that if they sold a Torah, you shall not buy Svarim. And Svarim, we've indicated, Nevi'im and Ksuvim, the later writings or prophets. Svarim hu delo ha Torah b'Torah Shapir Dami. Sale of Torah for Svarim is not allowed, but sale of Torah for Torah would be allowed. The Gemara rejects this. Masnisen di Ovad. The Mishnah is talking about a post facto situation where you had sold a Sefer Torah. Ki kol mibayalon l'chatkila. Our question is, as a first choice, can you initiate the sale of a Sefer Torah in order to buy a new Sefer Torah? That is not dealt with by the Mishnah. The Mishnah deals with a case where you already sold a Sefer Torah, so what are you to do with the money in such a case? So we say you shall not buy Nevi'im Ksuvim, but since you already sold it, so you have no other choice other than to buy a Sefer Torah with it. But what about as a first choice? Can you initiate a sale of a Sefer Torah in order to buy another Sefer Torah? That is not dealt with by the Mishnah. Toshma. So here we try, we quote another source. Notice the inverted triangle, indicating that it will be, the attempt here will be to show that it's not allowed. So we're going to quote a Tanaic source, and then after the source, we're going to extract a part of the source in order to make our point. The source says, Goylulim Sefer Torah b'mitpachos chumashim. You can, golem is to roll, a Sefer Torah is a scroll, and you're not supposed to handle the parchment itself with your hands, so we use cloths. Now, you can use cloths that were designated for chumashim. Chumashim are individual books of the Chamisha Chumshei Torah, and individual scrolls more accurately. So you can use mitpachos of chumashim for the use of a Sefer Torah. The chumashim b'mitpachos nevi'im uksuvim. And the cloths that were designated for a chumash scroll, you can use for the cloths that were designated for nevi'im uksuvim for chumashim. So once again, you are allowed to use chumash cloths for the rolling of a Sefer Torah, and you can use nevi'im uksuvim cloths for the rolling of a chumash scroll. As we said before, this is an example of raising the level of kedusha. Aval loy nevi'im uksuvim b'mitpachos chumashim. You cannot roll nevi'im uksuvim scrolls using the cloths of chumashim. V'lo chumashim b'mitpachos sefer Torah. And likewise, you cannot roll the chumash scrolls using the cloths designated for a sefer Torah. Kotoni mias. And however, says in this source, goylulim sefer Torah b'mitpachos chumashim. And we want to infer from the ratio of this source, from where this first part of the source, where you're allowed to roll Sefer Torah scrolls with cloths designated for chumashim. Mitpachos chumashim in, mitpachos Sefer Torah lo. The cloths of chumashim can be used for a Sefer Torah, but the cloths of another Sefer Torah for this Sefer Torah are not allowed. So what do you see? You see that parallel use is not permitted. Well, Amos Sefer. And here we will attempt to reject that by citing the Seifa, which says, "V'lo chumashim b'mitpachos sefer Torah." You're not allowed to use sefer Torah cloths for chumashim. That would be a lowering in sanctity, ha Torah b'Torah. But the use of another sefer Torah cloth for this sefer Torah, that would be allowed. That's what you can infer from the Seifa. The Seifa being this latter half of that Tanaic source. The Gemara says, since you see that you're actually inferring opposite conclusions from the same source, Elomeha Leko Lemishma Mino. From this source, to draw an answer, a conclusion to our question by inferences from either the Reisha or the Seifa, that you cannot do. Because as we just demonstrated, you come out to something contradictory. So the source is not taught for the purpose of drawing inferences. Rather, you learn the source at face value, and that's it. You're allowed to go up, you cannot go down. The issue of parallel movement is not seen here. We don't know. Toshma, so we continue in our attempt to find an answer to our question. And with the point facing up of the triangle, once again, we're going to try to show that it is allowed. So you can do a parallel kedusha movement. Manichin Sefer Torah Agabi Torah. You can place a Sefer Torah on a on another Torah, the Torah agabi chumashim. You can place a Sefer Torah on chumash, the chumashim agabi nevi'im uksuvim. And you can place a chumash on that which is of a lower level sanctity, nevi'im uksuvim. Aval, lo nevi'im uksuvim agabi chumashim, the lo chumashim agabi Torah. Now, so what do we see over here? In this source, Lamaisa, we see that you can place a Torah on a Torah, and that's not considered a violation of sanctity. So that the concept of parallel movement would be allowed. The Gemara rejects this. Hanocho ko'amris, you're trying to prove your point from the case of placing of manichin, shiny hanocha, the realm of placing one on the other is different. Deloy efsher. There, it's a situation where there is no other way to do things, and we'll explain what that means. De'i loy teima hochi, if you don't accept this idea, michrach hechi karchinon, how do you roll a scroll to begin with? When you have a Torah scroll, so one column, in effect, is lying on top of another column. It's a scroll. It's a roll. So you have column lying upon column. Ela kevandolo efsher shori. Since that there is no other way. That's the nature of a scroll. One layer lies upon another layer. Hachanami kevandolo efsher shori. So too, over here, with regard to the issue of lying one on top of the other, if you have no other option, let's say you have limited room, you can't have no other place to put things. So this is the way you do it. You pile one on top of the other, as we explained. The lesser level underneath the higher level, and in the case of two Torahs, so one on top of the other. But you can't use this information to draw conclusions to the question of what one does with the sale of money, or can you initiate the sale of a Sefer Torah to buy another Sefer Torah. Toshma. Again, note the inverted triangle. The Omar Rabo Bar Barchano Om Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Shimon Ben Gamliel Lo Yimkor Odom Sefer Torah Yoshon Likach Boy Chodosh. One is not allowed to sell an old Sefer Torah in order to buy a new Sefer Torah. So that would seem to indicate that parallel movement is not allowed. The Gemara says that you can't conclude from this teaching of Rav Shmuel Gamliel. This is a rejection. Hosom mishum pshiusa. That's a case of you might be left. Pshiusa means negligence, but it means if you sell a Sefer Torah Yoshan, your old Sefer Torah, you might never come about to having the new Sefer Torah. And we'll explain that in a minute. Ki koaminon. Our question is not the case that Rav Shmuel Gamliel was addressing. When Rav Shmuel Gamliel said, don't sell an old Sefer Torah in order to buy a new Sefer Torah, that means that the new Sefer Torah hasn't been written yet. So you cannot sell an old Sefer Torah to use the money to hire a scribe in order to write a new Sefer Torah, because it might never come to be, and then you'll be left without a Sefer Torah altogether. Our question, though, was something else. Our question was that there is a new Sefer Torah already written. Can you sell the old Sefer Torah in order to buy the already written new Sefer Torah? That the only thing that you need to do is to exchange, give the money, and take the already written new Sefer Torah. There's no issue of pshiusa. So the question is, my, what is the din? Toshma. And the triangle pointing up, we're going to try to show that it's allowed. The Omer of Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Meir, Ein Moichrin Sefer Torah, Elo Lulmoiter Veliso Isha. One is not allowed to sell a Sefer Torah other than for the purpose of learning Torah, or for the purpose of marrying a woman, that you need the funds in order to marry a woman. So what do we see from here? Shmamino, Torah v'Torah Shapir Domi. You're allowed to sell the Sefer Torah for the sake of Torah. The Gemara rejects this. Dilma shiny limud. It might be that the study of Torah, in fact, is on a higher level. It's different. Shal limud mevi lidei maise. Ishanami, and as far as the woman is concerned, that's also different. It's an exception to the rule. You're allowed to sell a Sefer Torah for that, because as the Pasuk says, Lo Yisoyhu V'ra Lo Sheves Yitzorah, the world was created not to be vacant, to be uninhabited, but to be inhabited, and that is accomplished only through the marriage with a woman and procreation. Aval Torah B'Torah Lo, but the sale of one Sefer Torah scroll for the purpose of another Sefer Torah scroll, that you don't see from here that it would be allowed. Tonu Rabbanan, lo yimkor odom sefer Torah, afal pi she'eno tzorich lo. One is not allowed to sell a Sefer Torah, even if he happens to have already a Sefer Torah, another Sefer Torah. Yeser al kein, Omer Rav Shimon Gamliel, afilu ein lo ma yochal, umochar Sefer Torah, obito, even if you have a case where a person doesn't have what to eat, and he needs money, and he sells a Sefer Torah, or he sells his daughter in servitude, he will not see increase or pleasure from that money, from the money that he receives in that exchange, in the sale of a Sefer Torah or the sale of his daughter into servitude. Omar v'chein b'mosrehem. The Mishnah said that the rules that we apply to the sale of a particular item applies to extra money that's left over in the sale and purchase. So that if a person, let us say, sold a lower level Kedusha item, and he bought something of higher Kedusha and didn't use all the money for that purchase, he had leftover money, so that leftover money will have the same restrictions. Omar Rovo, lo shonu elo shemochru vahosiru. The restriction of the Mishnah applies only in the case of a sale, and as we said, there was leftover money from the sale. Aval gavu vahosiru mutar. However, if a collection of money was made and they didn't need all of the money, then that restriction would not apply. If we take a look at Rashi, Rashi will find more than halfway down. Let's say a collection was taken up from the community for the purchase of a Sefer Torah, the kanuhu, and they bought a Sefer Torah, the nosar biyodim min adomim, and they didn't need all of the money that they had collected. Mutar lahoridon, you can use the leftover money for a lesser purpose. Sharei adayin lobo l'shimush kedusha chamura, the money that was left over had not been used already for a higher level kedusha. That, of course, is in contrast with the case of a Sefer Torah that had been sold, and the money that you received was for that higher level of kedusha. So all of the money was associated with Sefer Torah kedusha. Here, that's not the case. Esfe Abaye. Abaye challenges this. Before we continue further in the Gemara, let's just note our topic heading. The Nosei on the side reads, Mosei Amrinan, the Kesef HaNishar, Mimechiras Dover Kodesh, Mugbal B'Shimusho, Kemo Dover HaMakori. When do we say that money that's left over from the sale of an item of sanctity is restricted in its use like the original item? So Abaye raises a question. When do we say that the leftover money has a restriction? Shaloi hisnu, where no condition was stated. Aval hisnu afilu leduch susya mutar. But if a condition was stated, then even for a duch susya it will be allowed. Later the Gemara will explain what a duch susya is. It has to do with a horseman that rides for town necessities to send messages to the mayor of the community. So it's a communal horse. Now, we just read a source that said, under what circumstances are the leftover monies under restriction? That's when there was no condition stated. But if a condition was stated, so then you can use the monies even for a duch susya. Heshi dummy. What are the circumstances of this source? Ilemo shemochru vahosiru, if it's a case where they sold an item of sanctity and there was leftover money. Ki hisnu mai have. If they made a condition, so what? What difference would that make? It's sanctified money. Elo shegovu vosiru. Rather, what is the case? The case here is where money was collected for something and there was leftover funds. They didn't need all of the money that they collected. Taimo dehisnu. So the reason that it's allowed, the money is not restricted, is because they had made a stipulation beforehand. They stipulated that if we don't need all the money, so then it's the balance, the excess money can be used for anything we want. Holo hisnu lo. But if no condition was made, so then it is restricted. So what Rava said is that gavu v'esiru is mutter. It's not some type of blanket permission to use the leftover monies. Even in the case of collections that were taken up for an item, the balance money, the unused money, does have a restriction. Li'olam, the Gemara rejects this question, or responds to Abaye's question, and says, Li'olam shemochru v'hosiru. The case, in fact, is where there was an item that had been sold and money was left over. In other words, they didn't need all of the money for what they were now purchasing. V'hochi ko'omar. And to understand the source, well, let's understand it thusly. B'meh d'vam umurim. When is there a restriction regarding the leftover money from the sale of an item? Again, we're not dealing with collections anymore, so there's no kashan rova from here. We're dealing with the sale of an item. So when is there a restriction regarding the extra money that they don't need right now? Shelo hisnu shiva tuvei ha'ir b'maymed anshei ha'ir, where the sale was not made with the approval of the seven town representatives in the presence of the entire community. Abol hisnu shiva tuvei ha'ir b'maymed anshei ha'ir. If the sale was made under the conditions and stipulations of the seven town representatives in the presence of the community, afilu l'duchsusya nami mutter. Even for the purchase of a duchsusya, those leftover monies would be allowed. So that even if they sold something of sanctity, and it was done with the approval of the seven town representatives, they can purchase even a duchsusya. Omerle Abaye. Lahu merabonu dava mesader masniso kameh derav sheshes. Notice that we read that as a phrase. It's a description of somebody. Abaye said to an individual who used to recite Tanaic sources in front of Rav Sheshes. Mi shmiya loch merav sheshes my duchsusa. Did you ever happen to hear from Rav Sheshes what a duchsusya is? In other words, we saw a Tanaic source in which the word duchsusya was mentioned. Even though we offered an explanation, at this point in the Gemara, they don't know what that is. So the person who used to recite Tanaic sources in front of Rav Sheshes, maybe he heard from Rav Sheshes what that word meant. Omar le hochi om Rav Sheshes, parsha de masa. So the fellow answered, Rav Sheshes explained that parsha is a horse rider of masa, of the city, the town horseman. And as we said before, this was an individual who would carry messages from the community to the Moshelier, to the commander of the city, to the town leader, to town or leadership, the mayor of the town. Omar Abai Hilkoch, Abai says, from this little discussion, you see, hi, Tzurbim Rabbanon, Deshomale Milsevel Yada Pirusha, a Talmud Chochem who hears something and he doesn't know the explanation of it, the Shaila Kameh Deshchir Kameh Rabbanon, present your question to someone who frequents Talmudic stages, who frequents Talmidei Chachamim, the lo efshir de lo shmiale min gavra rabo, someone who is common with great men, it's not possible that he wouldn't have heard from a great man what it is, what his an answer to his question. So Abaye is pointing out just a piece of good advice, that it's good to know people who have connections, who are associated with Talmidei Chachamim, that through them you'll hear the meaning, the explanation of different difficult passages. As you can see, we have a slash mark, so we have a new point under discussion, and on the side of the Gemara under the Nose, the topic heading, we have the following. Kvutzas anoshim me'ir achas shenosa li'ir acheres, a group of men come from one community that traveled to another community. And while they were visiting the second community, a charity collection was taken up. A charity collection means a little more than just that, but rather a charity tax was imposed on that. We'll call it this second community. So the question is, what are the visitors to do? Omar Rabbi Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Meir Beneo Ir Shahochu Liir Acheres. So Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Meir, says that members of one community that visited another community, Pasku Aleim Tztaka, and a Tztaka tax was placed upon them, placed upon that second community, the host community. So Noisnim, these visitors shall contribute to that particular Tztaka tax, Ukshein Boyin, and when they, the visitors, are about to return home, Mevian Oiso Imohin, they can request their money in return, Umefarnesin Bo Aniye Iran, and they'll use that money to support their own local poor people. So the idea here is that so as to avoid suspicion that you don't pay tztaka taxes, so you go along with this imposed tax, pay. However, this second community, the community that the group is visiting, they cannot use those monies. They'll have to put them aside, and when the visitors return to their original community, they can demand those funds and support their own local folks with it. Tanya Nami Hoch, and a Tanaic source that supports Rabbi Yochanan's teaching. Beneo Ir Shahochali Racheres, members of one town that went to another community, Uposko Aleim Tztaka, and a Tztaka tax was placed upon them, Noistim. They pay along with the host community. Ukshein Boyin, and when the visitors return home, the Vien Oisa Imam, they bring that money back with them. Viyachit Shalachli Racheres, an individual that went to a second community, Uposko Alav Tztaka, and a Tztaka tax was placed upon him, as part of this called the second or host community, Tinosein Laniye Oiso Hoir. So even though you were a visitor, the money that was imposed, the tax that was imposed upon you, you pay that to the community you are visiting. Rav Huna Gozer Tanisa. Rav Huna imposed a public fast. Let's assume it was a situation of a drought or some other cause for supplication, and in doing so, a fast was imposed. Ol legabe Rav Chana bar Chaniloi v'chol b'nei Mosei. Rav Chana and his members of his Mosei's, his community, visited Rav Huna. Ramu alayu tztaka, Rav Huna placed upon them a tztaka obligation, the avu, and they paid Rav Huna the money. Kibou, and let's understand that in the context of public fasting and supplication, part of that was part of that of the prayer and the supplication is the offering of tztaka, of charity. Kibou lemesi, when they wanted to go back home, in other words, we have here Rav Chana bar Chaniloi and other townsmen, when they wanted to go back home, Omru Le, they said to Rav Huna, Noisva Lon Mor, Venezel Venefarnes Banye Moson, give us back the money that you collected from us, and we'll use it to support the poor people of our community. Omar Lahu, Rav Huna said back, Tanina. We have the following Tanaic source. Bamed Vamurin, when does the halacha that people can ask for their money back? That's if in the host town, B'she'en Shom, where in the second city, there was no Chover Ir. There was no Talmud Chocham. Rashi says that's Misasik B'tzorchi Tzibur. There was no Torah sage that's involved with communal affairs. Avol Yesh Shom Chover Ir. But if the host city has a Talmud Chocham who's involved with communal activities, Tinosein L'Chover Ir. The money shall be given to and remains with that host community. The Kol Shekein, and all the more so in our case, Danei Didi V'Didchu Olai Smichi, that the poor people in my town and the poor people in your town as well rely upon me. So that even though Rav Huna was located in a second community, nevertheless his authority was binding on other communities as well. The Mishnah. And before we begin the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, Machlokes Tanoim, Imutur Limkor Meir Gedolo Leir Katana. Can an item belonging to a large community sell to a small community. The Mishnah: Ein moichrin es shel rabim liyachid mipnei shemuridin oisoi bikedushaso. Divrei Rabbi Meir. You cannot sell something that is public, let's say a shul that is used by the public, to an individual, because that would be lowering its sanctity. Omru lo, so Rabbonon said to Rabbi Meir, im kain, if your halacha is so, af lo mi'ir gedoylo li'ir ketana, then even from a large community to a smaller community should not be allowed. And apparently Rabbi Meir doesn't object to that. All that Rabbi Meir objected to was selling from a community to a private person. Shapir ko'ami le'rabbonon Rabbi Meir. Well, it seems that the Rabbonon have a strong argument against Rabbi Meir. What does he respond? For Rabbi Meir, he says back to them, Me'ir gedolu li'ir ketana, from a large community to a smaller community, I'll tell you why that's all right. Me'ikora kadisha hashtonami kadisha. Originally, it had sanctity, and now, too, it's being used by a sibor, by a community, albeit a smaller community. Nevertheless, it retains its kedusha. However, may rabim liyachid leko kedusha, from the public to a private individual, what's going to happen now? It's when we spoke about kedusha, we were referring to what we call dvarim shebekedusha, things like kaddish or kedusha of the Shemoneh Esrei or Kriyas HaTorah. These are practices, they are prayers and rituals that require 10 people. By selling it to an individual, so that is no longer going to take place. So that's why selling from a community to an individual is forbidden. However, in selling from a larger community to a smaller community, from a larger group to a smaller group, the Kedusha remains. They still will be reciting Kedusha and Kaddish and reading the Torah there. The Rabbonon respond, Iiko lemechash, if you are going to worry or concern yourself with these kind of considerations, well, ki haigavno nami iko lemechash, regarding this case as well of larger community to smaller community, there is what to concern yourself with. Mishum beroiv am hadras melech, as the pasuk says that there is greater honor, hadras melech, glory to the king, when there's rovam, when there's a large assembly, so that you are diminishing this aspect when you sell from a large community to a smaller community. Now, let's take a look at the Rashi, second line from the top. V'rabbonon amri, i'iko lemechash bein rav lema'at, if, like you, Rabbi Meir, are taking into consideration large numbers, rav lema'at, to small numbers, exactly, as he says, the case of the individual, that you're not allowed to go from communal to individual, hochanami i'iko lemechash, so too, when you're dealing with the issue of numbers, there is room to concern as well, from large community to smaller community, which you seem to allow. What's the problem? Mishum barov am hadras melech, v'lo mishkachas mechira beveis hakneses. And if once you start thinking along those lines, you won't have ever a case of a sale of a shul. Elo lo chayshinan. Rather, we don't worry about that. The kevin the shokil domi umalu gedusha meula. Since you are getting money in exchange for the sale, and the money will be used for a higher level of kedusha, kol devoy lokeach ovid, whatever the purchaser wants to do with the structure, he can do. Chutz mi arba dvarim kedetonim seifu, with the exception of four examples, four things that will be taught later on. So, as far as the Rabbonon are concerned, you are allowed to sell a shul from one community to a smaller community, and sell it even to an individual. And why? Because the kedusha of the shul is transferred onto the money, and the money will be used for a higher purpose. And whatever else happens doesn't bother us. Now we continue with the Mishnah, and on the side of our Gemara we have a Nosei, a topic heading, Machlokas Rav Meir v'Chachamim Imutu Limkor Beis HaKnesses B'Mechira Muchletes. Can a shul be sold in a permanent fashion? Or even in a non-permanent fashion? The Mishnah. Ein mochrin beis haknesses elo al tnai. Shim yirtzu yachziru divrei Rabbi Meir. A shul cannot be sold unless it's a conditional sale. Namely, that the sellers, if they should so demand the shul in return, and of course give the money back to the purchasers, they can do so. The chomim omrim, mochrin oisomem ker oilam. The chum say that's not so, but rather a shul can be sold on a permanent basis. Chutz me'arbo advarim, with the exception of four purposes for which a shul cannot be sold. A synagogue cannot be sold. Lemerchatz, leburski, letfila, lebeis hamayim. Cannot be sold as a merchatz, a bathhouse, a bursiki, a tannery, tvila, a place of immersion, and beis hamayim, a Rashi says beis mei raglayim, a bathroom facility. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, mochrin osa l'shem chotzer valokech mash yirtze yaseh. Rabbi Yehuda seems to give a way around things, and he says you can sell the shul as a neutral type use, shem chotzer as a courtyard, and the purchaser can do with it whatever he wants. As far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, the main, let's say, burden of restriction is upon the seller. So if the seller sells it as a courtyard, so then the purchaser can do with it whatever he wants. The Gemara from here till the end of the narrow lines gets involved with a topic that isn't so germane to matters of sanctity and the topic of Maseches Megillah, but there is an important need to discuss the issue of interest, of ribbis. The Torah, of course, prohibits the taking of interest. And we're touching here upon a topic that gets involved with that. In other words, when a sale, let us say, like we saw in our mission, is done conditionally, what actually happens? Someone offers, A offers money to B. So A is a purchaser of an item. He gives money. A gives money to B. And then A receives something in exchange for the money he gave. So A gave money, he in the meantime benefits from some type of whatever item. And then we said, according to Rabbi Meir, the sale can be reversed. What does that mean? That means that A, who originally gave his money for the purchase of some item, A gets his money back. Now, in the meantime, not only does he get his money back, but in the meantime, he was also benefiting from that item. So the transfer of the money, in your mind's eye, looks a bit like a loan, where a lender gives money to a borrower, and the borrower pays back the money. But in this case, the purchaser who gave over the money for the item, he gets his money back, and in addition to the money that he gets back, he also benefited from the use of the item in the interim. So he's getting back his money plus. That's a problem that gets us involved in interest. According to Jewish law, the Torah law, when there are financial dealings between two Jews, a Jew is not allowed to get back more than he gave. And that's in the context of, certainly in the context of loans, and in the context, and here we're getting involved with the problem of a quasi-loan. It's this type of conditional sale. On the side of the Gemara, we have a topic heading. Love Omar Lamalve. Actually, before we do this topic heading, let's take a look at the Gemara itself. And the topic here is what we call, we'll be calling it later Tzad Echad Beribis. It's a well-known rabbinic phrase, and we'll see how it applies. Ula Rebbe Meir, according to Rebbe Meir, the Gemara begins, who said that the sale of the shul is allowed only if it's conditional, where the seller can demand back the shul. Hefi Dairi Ba. How is it that the purchaser literally dwelled in the structure? Ho Havya La Ribis. There is a problem of interest. In other words, the purchaser who gave money is going to be getting his money back. And in addition to getting his money back, he also had the benefit, the added benefit of living in the structure. And he's not paying for that living. He enjoyed living in there in the interim. So he's getting back his purchase money plus, and the emphasis is on the word plus the dwelling, the enjoyment of the structure during the interim period. Is that not a problem of ribis interest? Omer Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan answers, Rabbi Meir b'shitas Rabbi Yehuda Omra. Rabbi Meir here is following, readopts the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda that the Omar tzad echad ribis mutter. Tzad echad means where ribis, tzad echad beribis, where ribis figures, where it appears, but only under one of two possibilities, then it's allowed. In other words, let's try to keep things simple here. Where ribis is inevitable, then ribis, of course, is forbidden. Where the interest payment is inevitable, then it's clearly forbidden. So that in a case of a simple loan, where A loans money to B, and B is expected to pay back more money than he received, and that payback is going to take place under all circumstances, that's forbidden. However, where the interest, where the payback will include more, is not something that's inevitable, then it's allowed. And before we continue in the Gemara here, let's look at the side. We have a topic heading. Loive Shomar Lamalve. A borrower says to a lender, Im ad zman ployni lo achsiris kasbechov, until such and such a date, I don't give you back your money. Kach bimkoymi sodezu. So you take this field instead. So the borrower will end up paying back the loan either through a cash payment or through the field that will replace the money that he's expected to pay. In other words, this borrower has a field and he'll be transferring the field. The field will then be transferred to the lender in the case of borrower not having cash to pay back. We continue with our introduction. Le Rebbe Yehuda, according to Rebbe Yehuda, Mutter Lamalve, Lechol HaPeros Me'achshav. According to Rebbe Yehuda, the lender, the Malve, can immediately start using the fruits of that field that might potentially become his. Lamrois Shimaloive Yeshalem Es Chovoy, even though the borrower may end up paying back cash. Malvezeh benoisef lekabelos kasma b'chazora. This lender, in addition to getting his cash back, gam nene me'aperos, will also have been benefiting from the fruits in the meantime. Rabbonan, the Rabbonan regarding the same case will say muter, that this this field deal will be allowed, rak leloive lechol, muter rak leloive lechol peros sodezu. According to the Rabbonon, this kind of deal will be allowed, provided the borrower, whose field it is, he is the one that will be using the fruits. Now, when we look at this case, is there ribis here? So, we explained, we'll say it again. that in the event that the borrower pays back cash, then if the lender is using the fruits, the lender will have received his money, paid in full, plus the fruits. Let us say that the lender, that is, the borrower, does not pay back cash at all. If he doesn't pay back cash at all, well, the field was designated to belong to the lender anyway. So he was eating fruits from his own field. That's not a problem. The problem arises, and now we're sounding a little repetitious, but the problem arises only if the borrower pays back cash. The problem will arise if you have the lender using the fruits under the circumstances that the borrower pays back cash. So on that side, tzad echad, on that side of things, so there would be ribis. However, if the borrower does not pay back cash, then the field was designated as the lender's field. So under those circumstances, the use of the fruits on the part of the lender does not constitute ribis. He's using fruits from his own field in that case. So on one side, tzad echad, according to one scenario, there would be ribis. According to the other scenario, there's no ribis. Is that a problem? So according to Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Meir is basing himself on that, it's not a problem. And therefore, we will allow the lender to use the fruits, even though he may end up getting his cash back in return. How does that affect our case? The person who sold the shul, according to Rabbi Meir, he can demand the shul back. In the interim, the purchaser was using the shul as a dwelling. And if the sale is reversed, so then you do have the ribis scenario. If the sale is reversed, the purchaser gets his money back plus the use of the shul in the interim. However, if the sale is not reversed, that's the tzad echad. This is here's the other side, where if the sale is not reversed, so the purchaser bought a structure and dwells in it, and that's it. There's no issue of interest under those circumstances. So where the issue of the interest is not inevitable, Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay. Desanya. And now we go in our Gemara, we look at the Tanaic source. Hare Shehoya Noishe Bechavero Mona. A was collecting from Mr. B Mona. Mona, $100. Mona is an amount of money. The Osa Loi Sodeu Mecher. And the Lova, the borrower, which in our example is Mr. B, also lo, Mr. B, the borrower, said to Mr. A, my field is going to be yours if I don't pay cash by such and such a time. So if I don't pay you cash, let it be known that this field, and he designates a field, this will be yours. Bizman she moicher oichel peros muter, lokech oichel peros oser. According to the Tanakama, if the mocher, the seller of the field, who's the seller? He's the borrower of the money. So he's the loive. So if the borrower is using the fruits of his own field, then it's okay. However, if the malve, who's the lokech, he's considered the purchaser, he's the receiver of the field, the potential receiver of the field, if he is eating the fruits, that's forbidden. Because he might very well get back cash for the loan that he extended, and not only the cash, but he'll then have benefited from the fruits that he's eating. That would be a ribis problem. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, afilu lokech ochel peros muter. Rabbi Yehuda says, even if the lokech, who is the malve, the lender, uses the fruits, it's okay. Why? Okay, it's true that if he gets his cash back, he's getting more than just the cash, he's getting the use of the fruits. However, if he doesn't get his cash back, so the field is really his, and he's using his own fruits. The Yom Rabbi Yehuda, and Rabbi Yehuda, to strengthen his point, says, Maisa b'baitis ben zunin, she'osa sodeu mecher al pi Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. A case like this, where Baitis needed money, and he designated his field as a means of payment in the event that he doesn't get the cash to give back to the lender, and this was with the approval of Rebbe Elazar ben Azariah, and it was a case where the lender, the lokeach, who is really the lender, the lokeach truly means the purchaser, but it is a reference to the mouth of the lender, was eating the fruits. Amru lo, the Rabbonon said back to Rabbi Yehuda, Misham, Raya, you're trying to bring a proof from over there? Mocher ochel peros hoyavololo keach. We know about that case. And in that very case, it was the borrower, the mocher, the borrower, who was using the fruits and not the lender. My binaya, what's the underlying point of difference between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yehuda? Tzad echo beribis iko binayu. Iko binayu is highlighted with a diamond. These highlight the hesperim on the side of the Gemara. The hesperim machlokes Rabbi Yehuda v'chachamim hanal. We're trying to explain this machlokes tanoim. So what's the machlokes tanoim based on? Is tzad echod beribis allowed? Rabbi Morsovar tzad echod beribis mutter. Rabbi Yehuda holds that where the interest is not an inevitability, it's okay. The Mar Sovar and the Rabbanon hold Tzad Echad Beribis Oser, and the Rabbanon hold that if there's a possibility of, in this case, the use of the fruits coming to Ribis, even though it's not inevitable, but it is a possibility, so the use of the fruits on the part of the lender will be forbidden. Rava Omar, Rava disagrees and says the Kule Alma Tzad Echad Beribis Oser. Even Rabbi Yehuda would agree that in the case of a loan, as we described in with regard to the field and the use of the fruits, everyone will agree. Even Rabbi Yehuda will agree that the lender cannot use the fruits. That's clearly usur. What about the lender, under the same circumstances, using the fruits, but it's understood, it's agreed that if the lender gets his cash back, that the lender will compensate for the fruits that he ate. In other words, a condition is made that in the event that you pay me back cash and that I was using the fruits, I'll be taking the fruits on condition that I pay you back for the fruits. V'hocha beribis al menas lahachzir iko binayu. Here, the issue is, can interest be taken, so to speak, with the condition that it will be returned, it will be paid for? That is iko binayu. That's the point of difference. Mor sovar ribis al menas lahachzir mutter. Rabbi Yehuda says it's allowed. Mor sovar osir, that even where you stipulate that you will pay back whatever you took as interest, even that is forbidden. So as far as Rava is concerned, to set up Rabbi Meir in the case of the sale of the shul based on Rabbi Yehuda and explain it as Tzad Echad Beribis that he would allow, Rava is saying no. As far as how we explain the case of the shul and Rabbi Meir's din on receiving the money in return, so that's something that needs more analysis. We haven't sufficiently explained that at this point. What might be worth looking at is there's a little Tosfos here. Rava Amar Ribis Amanas LaHachzir Iko Binayu. Ule Rabbi Meir de Masnisin, Rabbi Meir of the Mishnah Svirale, Shohoyu Masnin Lahachzir Schirus Besaknesis Kishechozru, Ubahochi Shoru Kerebi Yehuda. So Tosfos explains that in the case of the sale of the shul that Rabbi Meir said must be sold conditionally. Also, in the event that the sale is reversed and the purchaser gets his money back, and we ask, what about the interim dwelling in the shul on the part of the purchaser? So the deal was made that if the sale is reversed, the purchaser will pay the value of the rental that is due for the interim period of time that he was using it. So you can see that the analysis that Rava presents here is applicable to the Mishnah, and the Almanas Bahasir element, this condition of returning, is the condition of paying the rent that the purchaser would owe in the event that the sale is reversed. Rabbi Meir says that's an acceptable situation, and the Chumim would say that that cannot be done. The Gemara continues. V'chachomim omrim moichrin oisamim ka'olam. The sale must be a permanent sale. No conditions and returns of monies and all that we just described. Before we go further, we have a topic heading on the side. Hispalo v'acha kach roitzel lahashtin. Hishtin v'acha kach roitzel hispal. The Gemara will deal with someone who is davening, who prays, he finishes davening, and he needs to relieve himself. Or the opposite, he relieves himself, and then immediately after relieving himself, he urinated. Can he immediately start davening? Can he start praying? Omar, and now this, of course, is coming on the heels of the fact that the Mishnah made reference of the sale of the shul is allowed for all purposes other than as a bathroom facility. So, in light of that, Omar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Mutul Odom Lahashtin Mayim Besokta Al Amas Shel Tefila. So again, Rabbi Yehuda name of Shmuel is telling us that as soon as someone finishes davening, he can mashtin, he can urinate. Where he can do that, where he davened. So that mutar odom lahashtin mayim besoch dalan amas shel tefila means quite literally that as soon as he finished davening, within four amas of where he davened, he can relieve himself. Omar Rav Yosef, my komashmos. Rav Yosef says, well, what's the big news? What's he telling me, Tanina? From the Mishnah itself, we can discover that this is okay. It says in the Mishnah, Rav Yehuda Omer, moichin oisoy l'shum chotzer, a person can sell a shul to a purchaser as we said, a neutral sale. He's selling it to the purchaser as a courtyard. And the purchaser can do with it whatever he wants. And it would seem from the Mishnah that according to Rabbi Yehuda, the purchaser can do with it whatever he wants, even the things that the Rabbanon in the Mishnah had restricted. He can use it even as a bathroom facility. V'afilu Rabbonon lo ko'amri elo beis haknesses. Even the Rabbonon, who were restrictive, they said that you cannot sell a shul. A beis haknesses, the kaviyah, means a structure, a built shul. You cannot sell it for the purpose of a beis hamayim, as a urinal, a urination facility. The kaviyah, kedushah say, a beis haknesses, which is kaviyah kedushah say, has a permanent type of holiness to it. So something like that, you can't sell for a beis hamayim. Avol dalet amos delo kavia kedusha sayulo. But the idea of four amos within the area that you daven out in the outdoors somewhere. The location that you davened in, that you prayed in, doesn't have inherent sanctity. It doesn't have a fixed permanent sanctity to it. So, under such circumstances, there is no restriction. And if you want to relieve yourself right then and there, it's okay. Just to read that last line again, the Rabbanan would not have any objection to doing what Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel said. So the question that Rabbi Yosef raises is, what do I really need Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel's teaching for when that can be discovered, that is understood from a Tanaic source that we already have? And the discussion ends there. Before we continue, we have a new marking, and on the side we have under our Mivneh heading a house shape with Roman numerals 1 and 2. Shnei Girsois Bebraisa Benoiseana. We're going to have two versions of a Tanaic source regarding this issue. Harchoka Mamish Sheldalan Amos, the issue concerning prayer and its proximity to relieving oneself. Do we insist on an actual physical distancing, or Shia Shelzman Kidei Hiluch Dalet Amos? Or when we speak about Dalet Amos, do we refer to a time period, the amount of time it takes to walk for Amos? Toni Tano Kamei de Rav Nachman. So there was a Tanaic source stated in the presence of Rav Nachman, HaMispalel Marchik Dalet Amos Umashtin. HaMashtin Marchik Dalet Amos Umispalel. Just on a very technical level, this Tanaic text seems to differ with Rav Yehuda Mar Shmuel's teaching, which said Mutar Odom Lashtin Mai Besoch Dalet Amos Shel Tfila. That is just a separate point, but we continue with what we have on hand, and that is we have a source that says that one who davened, he distances 4 amos and then relieves himself, and one who relieved himself and he hasn't davened yet, he distances himself 4 amos and then davens. Omar Le Bishlama, so Rav Nachman, upon hearing this source, he comments, Bishlo hamashtin marchik damus palel. This idea that one who relieved himself, he urinated, he has to distance 4 amos before he can daven tanino. We have a Tanaic source that bears that out. The kamo yarchik mehenu minatsoya. How much must a person distance himself from urine, meiraglayim, and from feces for dalet amos? All right, so that particular teaching in this Brisa makes sense, that one who is mashtin, before he can daven, he has to distance himself for amos because of the filth that the meiraglayim represents. Elohim ispalel marchik dalet amos umashtin lomali. But someone who prayed, and before he can relieve himself, you insist on his distancing for amos. Why? Lomali. Why is that the case? Ihachi, if you're going to insist on that, well, it's you're making it sound like the place that you prayed in, that it has sanctity, even though you prayed out in the street. You're making it sound like it has sanctity, and as a result, you've got to distance yourself 4 amos. Well, if you accept that, Ihachi, kidashtinu lekulu shvili denahardo, you have in effect sanctified all the paths, all the streets of Nahardo. You're not going to find 4 amos in Nahardo where someone didn't at one time daven. In other words, people in the course of time don't always have a chance to get to shul. People are running late, and they daven wherever they are, in the street. So if you're going to tell me that you've got to distance yourself after davening before you can relieve yourself, implying that where you davened has some kind of sanctity, well then, you've basically sanctified all of the streets of Nahardo. And as a result of that, you won't be able to relieve yourself anywhere. And of course, that's too restrictive on the community. People have to be able to relieve themselves wherever, if necessary. So the Gemara says, Tani, rather restate the Tanaic source as Yisheh. Instead of using Yisheh, means delay. It's a time issue. Instead of yarchik, meaning physical distancing, learn the source in terms of time. And now we take that and carry on with that rereading. And we go over the two points. We had a source which had aleph and beis in it, and we continue our analysis. Bishlamo, I understand the second point of the source, mashtin yishek kedehi luch dalet amos, that after relieving yourself, you wait the amount of time it takes to walk 4 amos, walk, let's say, 2 meters, it's a matter of a couple seconds. But you should pause before davening. In other words, you relieved yourself. Pause a moment. Mishum nitzotzots, because of droplets. Now we look in Rashi, about halfway down the Rashi column, Mishum nitzotzos shelo yetanfu begodov benitzotzos sheba mosai, in the organ of relief. So after one relieves himself, there's sometimes droplets left, so that you want to make sure that all those droplets exit the body before davening, because otherwise, if you don't wait that amount of times, those droplets will then get on your clothing, and that's not right for a person who's davening. Elo mispalel, we continue in the Gemara, elo mispalel yishek kedei hiluch da'alamas, the first part of that Tanaic source, which would state that one who prayed, he should delay the amount of time to walk 4 amos before relieving himself. Lomali, what's the point in that? He finished davening. Why? Before he finished davening, and we said the issue of physical distancing is not an issue, it's just a matter of timing. So why not relieve yourself immediately? We answer this. Omar Ravashi, Shekol Dalin Amos, the amount of time that it takes to walk 4 amos, even though you physically finish the actual prayer, you should imagine it's as if the prayer still reverberates in your mouth for another couple seconds. So in a sense, you're still, even though you finished praying, the words of the prayer reverberating on your lips, and at that point, of course, one cannot relieve himself. The two don't go, they don't go in tandem. So wait a couple seconds and only then relieve yourself after having davened. And here we start a section of Gemara that's quite lengthy by way of Gemara text. It takes us all the way down to the end of Chof Ches Amud Aleph. So of course, in the context of our Daf Yomi Shiurim, we're not going to cover all of this, but on the side of the Gemara, there are no say mivne heading. You see a triangle is featured. Shalu Talmidov. You'll see this phrase. The students asked, and a double underline is Rebbe so and so. So you have, as you scan ahead, you see questions posed to Rebbe Zakkai, and then questions posed by the students of Rebbe Elazar ben Shamua. At the bottom line, the Talmidim ask Rebbe Preda, and this series continues, as we said, all the way down Chof Ches Amud Aleph. And the question that you will see repeated again and again, and we use there's a dashed underline that you'll see that highlights this, Bame harachta yomim, how is it that you lived so long? Sidra Sharabonim Shirichu Yomim, we see a series of rabbis that experienced longevity. Vinishalu al yedei tamidehem be'ez eschus higir legilom ha-muflag. And the question will be posed to each one of them by the students, how, in what merit, did they achieve this longevity? So now we turn to the Gemara, and we have a Simon, Zalfon Simon. The letters here represent the names of the rabbis to whom this question is posed. So they include at least four names. You've got the Zion, will be Rabbi Zakkai. The Zion of his name is clear. The Lamed will introduce, it refers to Rabbi Eliezer. In the word Eliezer, there's a Lamed in the middle of the name, even though it's not the first letter of his name. Nevertheless, it helps us to remember. And the Pei will be Rabbi Preda. And following Rabbi Preda, we see Rabbi Nechunya ben Akona, also a Nun there. It is noteworthy that even though this simon covers four Rabbonim, the series continues beyond that. Now the Gemara. Shalo Tamidov es Rebbe Zakai, Bame Herachta Yomim, in what merit did you live such a long life? And of course, everyone would wonder, what's the connection of this to our sukya? It'll be very obvious in one moment. Omar Lahem, so Rebbe Zakai answered, Mi Yomai, all of my days. And he mentions here, there are several points. Number one, Lo Hishtanesi, or Lo Hishtanti, Mayim Besokta Alamas Shil Tfila. I didn't relieve myself within four amos of praying. Now, Rash, the Tosfos adds here, the Tosfos, see in the middle of the Tosfos column, Lo Hishtanti Besokta Alamas Shil Tfila, Vafilu Hecha Sheish Heter Gomor. Even where one is allowed. In other words, here we're talking about a physical distancing. It seems that he says even where it's even where there's a total allowance. He waited. If we were using the final pshat of the Gemara that the source is read in terms of waiting, he waited the four amos, but nevertheless he imposed upon himself an additional stringency that he was marchik. He physically distanced himself from where he had prayed. So that's, we'll say, an added feature giving him what's called special merit. Velo kinisi, we go on in the Gemara, velo kinisi shem l'chaveri. I didn't call my friends by nicknames. The Tosfos says, lo kinisi shem l'chaveri, afilu kinui d'lo have gnai. Even a kinui that is not disparaging. Now, as far as a kinui, a nickname that's disparaging to the individual, that, by letter of the law, is strictly forbidden. But even those kinds of nicknames that are not, let's say, disparaging, even those he avoided. He wouldn't call his friends those. Now, the Tosfos goes on, behold, yamrinon, tamachan shem l'chaver, enu chilikom haba, hainu, Bekinui shel pagam mishpocha. The Gemara Bava Metzia says that one who calls his friend with mechana, kinui, a nickname, he loses his portion in the world to come. That's if someone uses a disparaging family name, a name that's used to disparage the family. A third merit that Rabbi Zakai had, Velo Bitalti Kiddush Hayom, and I never missed reciting Kiddush over wine. Imo Zakena Hoysoli, I had an elderly mother. Pam Achas Mochro Kipo Shebarosha, once she sold her headscarf, Vehevili Kiddush Hayom, and because I was very poor and we had no money, she went this far as to sell her own headscarf and used the money to make sure that I had wine for Kiddush. Tana. And here's a beautiful illustration of what happens when people put themselves out for mitzvahs. Kishemesa, when she passed away, henichuloi shloshmeos garvayayin. She ended up becoming well-to-do, it seems, and she left for her son 300 flasks of wine. Kishemes hu, and when Rabbi Zakai passed away, hiniach livonov shloishes alofim garveyayin, and he left for them 3,000 flasks of wine. The Tosfos adds, very importantly, Kidamrinon, as it is said, is the Tosfos, the second to last Tosfos, in Icholog Shlosh Meis Garve Yayin, Kidamrinon, Hazoyer Bekidish Hayom, Zochim Malim Lo Garve Yayin. One who is careful, who is diligent in Kiddush Hayom, merits having left, receiving many, many flasks of wine. This is a Maimer Chazal that is quoted from Shabbos Dap Chof Gimel Amud Beis. Before we continue, just take note of the fact that we have a bracketed section, and on the side, under the note that accompanies, the starred note, Sograim Elu Enom L'Shem Diluk, these brackets are not for skipping purposes, Elo Laharos, just to show the Ad Kan Inyonosh Rabbi Zakai, that up till here we were dealing with Rabbi Zakai. B'soichem uva maisim Rav Huna, Shekosh L'Inyon D'Liel, within the brackets, a story involving Rav Huna comes up, and its connection is Shagam Kan Musker Mesiris Nefesh Avur Yayin Lekidush. Extending himself, Mesiris Nefesh, putting himself out for Kiddush. So, with that in mind, and realizing that three lines from the bottom we pick up with this series of questions of Shalom Tamidov, let's now go through the bracketed section. Rav Huna hava osa risa, v'koy kamei derav. Once upon a time, Rav Huna was girded with a, instead of a normal belt, he girded himself with a piece of reed material. And he was standing in front of Rav like that. Amalei mai hai, so Rav asked him, what is this? It's an odd way to go around dressed with a piece of reed serving as your belt. Amalei, so Rav Huna says, lo hava li chamro l'kidusha. I didn't have wine for Kiddush. Umashkante lehmainai v'asoi be yayin kidusha. And I offered my belt, my formal, my regular belt, as collateral, and with that, I was able to acquire wine for Kiddush. Amar Leh, so Rav said, Yehei Ravo, Yehi Ratzon, it shall be the will of the Almighty, that Titum Beshiroi, that you should be enveloped in silks. Which this would appear to be a blessing of wealth, that in the merit of your extending yourself for Kiddush, you should be enveloped in titum b'shiroi. That means you should be enveloped in silks, a sign of wealth. Ki ichlau rabo brei, when the wedding time came for Rav Huna's son, Rabo, so when Rav Huna's son was getting married, Rav Huna inish gutza have. Rav Huna was a very short man. Gona apuria, and he was lying on a bed. Asyon binse vekalse, Rav Huna's daughters and daughters-in-law, they went into this room where Rav Huna was lying on the bed, and he was quite obviously not obvious. He was very short, and these women went into the room. Sholchan v'shadyan manayu ole, and they took off their clothing. How much they took off is not really an issue for us to discuss, but they took off their clothing. They threw the clothing on the bed. Ad the itum b'shiroi, until Rav Huna was actually covered in and wrapped in these silks. So there, you can see, especially if you use our markings, you see the dot underlining. You see that Rav's brocha came to fulfillment. Shoma Rav Ikbid. Rav heard this story and he was upset. Omar, Rav said, "My taimo lo amrisli ki berachtich. Why did you not say at the time that I gave you the blessing? You should have said v'chein lemor, and likewise." For you, in other words, if A blesses B, Rav blessed Rav Huna with a blessing, B, the listener should have said, and same to you, Mr. A, who are giving the blessing, should also merit this. Now, the Bach, his commentary, if we look at Ois Beis, so he says there, near B'enai, Afal P, Shalohoya Shum Revach L'Rav Huna, Behold Ahavu Shadya Menayu Alei. The truth is that Rav Huna didn't become rich. In this story, all that happened is that what Rav said in a literal sense, that became true. But Rav Huna didn't become wealthy here. So if Rav Huna didn't become wealthy, so why was Rav upset? It's not as if Rav Huna benefited from the blessing and then Rav now feels he lost out on what Rav Huna benefited from. Rav Huna didn't benefit. Afilu hochi ikbid Rav, the Bach goes on to say that even so Rav was upset. The Shemoya Eis Ratzon, Ubididei Have Hadover Tola, Umiskayim, Tohoya Magia Looisher Godol. Rav, though, saw here that it was Eis Ratzon, a special time. A special time of opportunity, that since at least an aspect of the bracha came true, so that it seems that maybe Rav Huna was the man, so to speak, through which the blessing could come to be. And had Rav Huna said the chein lemor, so wealth in fact would have come in Rav's direction. Let's continue in the Gemara. Shalu Talmidov es Reb Elozer ben Shemua. So Reb Elozer ben Shemua was presented with the same question: how did you merit living such a long life? Omar Lohem, he told the students, Miomai lo asisi kapandario lebeis hakneses. Again, you see a number of points here. First is, I never made the synagogue into a shortcut. I never cut through a shul because it would shorten my distance from one place to another. Falo pasati al roshei am kodosh. And I never stepped over the heads of the people. The Rashi points out that there, at times, the Talmidim, the students, would sit on the floor of the Beis Medrash, and when Rav Elozer had to get to his place, so it would involve stepping between them, and it would appear as if he was walking over them. So that situation isn't the most honorable situation to the students. So what he never, apparently he always arranged such that he would be the first one there, or he had some kind of special entrance to the Beis Medrash, but he always avoided this, of being poiseya, of taking steps, al roshei am kodesh, walking in such a way that it would appear as if he's walking over their heads. Velo, number three, velo nasasi kapi belo brocha. Reb Elozer ben Shemua, you can see from here, was apparently a Kohen, and it says he would never do the Birkas Kohanim without making the Brocha beforehand. The Brocha that Rashi quotes, what the Brocha text is before the Birkas Kohanim. So he was very careful about making the Brocha beforehand. A point like this requires some analysis, because for us it seems like it's an obvious thing that, of course, a Kohen, before he does the bracha, when he says the bracha, it's part of the letter of the law. Why does that serve as a point of merit per se, something special? When we speak about meriting long life, we're talking about behavior that it shows that one is extending himself beyond letter of the law. How that manifests itself here does require some further discussion. And we have another example. Shalom Tamidov asked Rabbi Prada, Bamay Harachta Yomim. Rabbi Prada was asked this question, and the Gemara gives a list of behaviors, three different points. But if you are familiar, some of you may be familiar with this name and long life. There's a very well-known story in Maseches Erevin concerning Rabbi Prada as having lived 400 years, a very long life. And the Gemara in Erevin explains the reason for it, and it doesn't seem to conform to anything that we're seeing over here. So Tosfos says, the last Tosfos, Shaltimiv, said Rabbi Prada, Mahachta Yomim, Koshe, the question is raised, Dehare Hoya Bishus Shoyashenu L'Talmid Echad Arba Me'a Zimni. The Gemara in Erevin tells us that he had such extreme patience in teaching Torah. He taught one student a point of learning, a point of Torah learning, Arba Me'a Zimni, 400 times. V'nofak bas koil, and a heavenly voice came forth and announced. And here we're going to pick up, instead of the text we have in the Tosfos, we go to the bottom of the page and read the Bach's text. The Omro Lei, Nicholoch de Liski, At Bukli Dorch Le Alma de Ossi, Oide Li Sofi, Lo Chaye, Dalet Meyashonim. The question the heavenly voice posed to Rabbi Prada was, do you, in honor of your extreme patience with that student, of teaching him Torah, would you like that you and your entire generation should merit the world to come, or have 400 years added to your life? Omar and Rabbi Prada answered, "Deniski anovedaroy l'amadasi. I would prefer that I and my generation should merit the world to come." So Omar HaKadosh Baruch, we continue in our Tosfos text, the Kodesh Baruch Hu said, "Yavi leha v'ha, give him both." So he got the long life through what? Through the patience he had with the student. Not what the Gemara says over here, and we haven't read the Gemara here, but you can see there are three points listed, and none of them is because of the patience. So, which is the real reason for his longevity? V'yesh lomar, de'me'ikora lo yoda kein ad lebesof, shiro shechoya kol kach. Apparently, this question was posed to Rabbi Prada before he reached 400 years of life. So,
he must have reached an old age. Obviously, they're even living to 175 is an old age. So he was asked the question that maybe at that point, and he at that point didn't realize that he, after all, he told the heavenly voice that he wanted to receive Olam Haba together with his generation. So the idea of living 400 years wasn't clear to him at that point. But what was clear to him was what we'll now learn in the Gemara. So Rabbi Prado, who was asked by Meir Rach the Yomim, we go back to the Gemara at the bottom line. Omar Lehem, Miyomai lo kidmani odom lebeis hamedrash. Never did anyone arrive in the yeshiva, in the study hall, in the place where people learn Torah before me. I was always the first one there. We continue at the top of Chof Chesam and Aleph, top line. V'lo beirachti lifnei kohen. This is something that is also discussed in the Meforshim. Rashi makes reference to this at the top line. V'lo beirachti b'su'uda lifnei kohen. Domamar v'kidashto. V'chol dover shebegusha liftoch rishon l'vorech rishon. The one who is the first to lead in a brocha recitation shall be a kohen. So, Rabbi Prada says, I always yielded to a kohen when it came to the matter of leading in a brocha. Let us point out that this point number two and also point number three will be elaborated on in the Gemara itself very shortly. And number three, lo achalti mi behemo shelo hurmu matnosan, and I never ate from meat, from a slaughtered animal, from which the portions that are due to kohanim from every behemas chulin, those are gifts to the kohen that the Torah accounts for. They are the zra l'chayev akeva. The zra is the forearm of the animal, the cheek of the animal, which might very well include the tongue, and the keva, the stomach. These are the matnas kahuna that we're referring to here. Gifts given to kohanim from every behemas chulin that's slaughtered. And Rabbi Prada says, I wouldn't eat from meat from which these gifts were not prior given to the kohanim. In other words, once the kohen would receive his zeruah l'chayim v'keva, then I would partake of the meat. Now, notice we have a bracketed section, and on the side under this, at the start notes, Sagraim elu enom ledilug. These are not for skipping purposes. Elo laharos the adkan siem horoshima Rabbi Prada. That up till here we have the list of merits that Rabbi Prada felt that he had. Besocha sagraim hagmora mityacheses lizchuyas sheni v'shlishi bar mishima. Within the brackets, we will be now going over points 2 and 3 in actually reverse order. First point 3, and then point 2. Before the Gemara gets to the next Rav, Rabbi Nachman Akona, and the students asking him about Meharach the Yomim. So now, in the bracketed section, Rabbi Prado said, I didn't eat from meat from which the matonas were not given to the Kohen. The Omer Rabbi Yitzchok, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, Osu Lechom Ibehema, Shalohum Ramat Nasea. It is forbidden to eat from an animal whose portions were not first given to the kohen. The Omer Rabbi Yitzchok, and Rabbi Yitzchok also says, "Kola oichel mi behemo shelohurmu matnasel ki ilu oichel tvolim." One who eats from a behema whose meat portions or gifts were not given to a kohen, it's tantamount to eating untithed produce. And by the way, eating untithed produce carries with it a very serious penalty, and that is death at the hands of heaven. Miso midei shamayim. The less Hilchos Hagavasa, but the Gemara rejects that to suggest that eating untithed meat is the equivalent of eating untithed produce, that is not true. V'lo beirachti lifnei kohen, Rabbi Prada says, I never blessed before a kohen, other I never took over the blessing where a kohen should have blessed. So the Gemara asks, "Lameimer demal yusehi?" Is this something that's positive? The Amar Rabbi Yochanan, "Kol Talmud Chacham shemivorech lefonov." Any Talmud Chacham that's present, say in our case he's present at a meal, and someone else blesses in front of him in his stead. Afilu kain gadol ama oretz, even if you're dealing with a kohen, but he's the high priest, but he happens to be an ignoramus. Oisa tamid chacham chayav misa. That tamid chacham, because he yielded to such an individual, that tamid chacham is worthy of death. Shinema kol misanai ahavu moves. Al tikri misanai. Literally, the pasuk says, "All those that hate me love death." Don't read it as such. Rather, elo masnii. All those that cause me to be scorned are deserving of death. And this comes up when the public sees that a Talmud Chacham is treated in a secondary fashion, in a demeaning fashion, where he's not given, where a Torah sage is not given the due honor to him. And that would be the case where an ignoramus is given the honor that he doesn't deserve. So what happens? People then lose their respect for Torah learning. They see that Talmud Chacham is treated as a secondary individual. So a Talmud Chacham has to be careful to always make sure, and here, once again, this is not a function of haughtiness or honor grubbing. This is a discussion, this is an issue concerning preserving the honor of Torah. And when a Talmud Chacham is given honors, so the honor, the grandeur of the Torah is preserved. And actions that diminish that, as you can see, is a very harsh statement. It's called Masnii Avu Moves. People who do that, as the Rabbi Yochanan says, is Chayav Misa. So how can Rabbi Prado feel that he is praiseworthy when he says, well, that a Kohen would always bless? I was careful to make sure that a Kohen would always bless instead of me. And bless meaning like leading leading in the brachas that you find recited in the course of a meal. So the Gemara responds, Ki ko'omar ihu, when Rabbi Prado said what he said, that velo beirachti lifnei kayin, is b'shovin. Shovin means, literally, it means someone of an equal status. Meforshim point out, it doesn't mean they necessarily were the same status as Rabbi Prado, but they were people that were worthy of honor because of their Torah scholarship. And Rabbi Prado, of course, would not have let an Am Ha'aretz, an absolute ignoramus, even though he may have been a Kohen, to lead in the bracha recitation. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.